How do you like the sound of a bank that's built for you, not the 1%? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, you should check out Chime. Chime isn't just another banking app. They unlock smarter banking for everyday people with products like MyPay, giving you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and getting paid up 2 days early with direct deposit. They also don't charge an overdraft or minimum balance fee, so you're in control of how you spend your money. In fact, there's no monthly fee at all. Instead of charging you to use your own money, Chime actually turns everyday spending into real rewards and progress. It's the new way to build credit history with your own money and get rewarded every single day. Plus, you can earn up to 3% APY on savings, which is 7 times higher than a traditional bank. Several of my mates have already switched to Chime for their everyday spending, and they say that they have never felt more in control of their money. Chime is not just smarter banking, it's the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/redhanded. That's chime.com/redhanded.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Oh, hi there, and welcome to our Patreon wrap-up. What is this? What on earth am I talking about? Well, if you don't know what our Patreon is, it is basically a membership platform that allows us to create our very own subscription service. So if you head on over there, you can choose however much money you want to subscribe to Red Handed for, and then in return, you get more and more content. So the more you give, the more you get. It's really simple. And so, because we generate so much content over there on a weekly basis, we decided it was only fair if we made the rest of you aware of exactly what was going on. So every single month, we put together a very quick wrap-up of some of the highlights from our Patreon content, and that is this. So enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side.
Of course, we all know Slender Man isn't real. He couldn't be. He's just a creepy fictional character from the internet created for a fantasy competition. But that's where things get a bit complicated. On the 31st of May 2014, Slender Man would be blamed for the brutal stabbing of a 12-year-old girl. It was a case that hit the headlines internationally, causing a moral panic that brought creepypastas and kids' internet use to the forefront of public attention. However, before we get into that, we're going to have to tell you about three girls from Waukesha, Wisconsin.
The sleepy city of Waukesha is known by locals as a very safe place. So safe, in fact, that as of 2014, there had only been 9 recorded homicide cases in the last decade. A common phrase that kept popping up during our research was, "It's Waukesha. Nothing bad ever happens in Waukesha." Now, of course, this isn't true. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it here on Red Handed. But the general vibe is very much that Waukesha is a nice place to live and to raise a family. Morgan Geyser and Peyton Lutner came from 2 such families and grew up in the city. Morgan and Peyton had known each other since kindergarten and become best friends in the 4th grade, which is at about like 9 or 10 years old. And this actually happened, and I thought this was very sweet, after Peyton had spotted Morgan sitting alone at lunch. She decided to go and sit with her, and from that point on, the girls became inseparable, bonding over their mutual love of cats and drawing. Morgan's mum described her as a, quote, quirky child. She would spend hours alone in her room speaking to imaginary friends, including, but not limited to, a rainbow unicorn and, very specifically, Professor Snape from Harry Potter. And, you know, this kind of thing is pretty fucking normal for a 9 or 10 year old, I assume, and so Morgan's parents didn't think too much of it. After all, most children her age have had imaginary friends. But what they did notice about Morgan was that she seemed to lack empathy. Morgan's parents recalled a time when Morgan was very little and the family had sat down to watch Bambi. And when, spoilers, Bambi's mum dies, four-year-old Morgan seemed totally unaffected. She told her parents that there was no point in Bambi being sad about something he couldn't change.
That is so dark.
That's fucking cold.
Ugh.
That's fucking cold. Yeah, and like, yes, four is very young, but absolutely by 4 years old, children have a sense of like empathy and like the ability to see that something sad is happening and to feel that pain. But Morgan, no, she's not here for it. She hasn't got time to waste on feelings and feeling sad and wasting your time thinking about things that you can't change, apparently.
No.
You'd be scared, wouldn't you, if you're 4-year-old, you're watching Bambi and you're sobbing. I haven't watched Bambi because I don't want to do that to myself. I know everyone's very upset. I can't. I haven't watched Dumbo either. It just seems very sad.
To be honest, in the grand scheme of the Disney catalogue, of which I have seen all of it multiple times, it's just not that good.
No, it just seems too sad.
It's not even because it's sad. It's just like actively really boring and the songs aren't even good. And like, I don't care.
I'm just not interested.
The only good thing that happens in Bambi is the little skunk being like, "You can call me Flower if you want to." That's just us. So don't worry about it. If you haven't seen Bambi, don't bother. I've just given you the best bits. It's fine.
Excellent. I feel absolutely vindicated now. But I assume if I did watch it, I would be a sobbing mess. And I don't think there is anything colder I can imagine than if I one day have a four-year-old, we watch Bambi together, I'm crying hysterically and I look down at my child and my child's like, "What's your point? What's your point though?"
Yeah, I don't think I ever cried at Bambi. I definitely still cry at Dumbo when his mum dies. That floods of tears every time.
Didn't watch Dumbo because I knew that was going to happen. I did watch Fox and the Hound, which is just too sad. I can't cope with that film.
I never vibed with Fox and the Hound. I think because I didn't have it on VHS, but all of the other ones I had and would repeatedly watch over and over and over again. Fox and the Hound, I just didn't have it, so I don't feel that like emotional connection to it.
I obsessively watched quite an odd Disney film, and this is 100% true. I had the VHS of Fantasia, and I wore that shit out. I watched it like twice a day when I was little.
See, maybe we are supposed to be together because I also obsessively watched Fantasia.
Oh my God, you're like the first person that's not been like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" I love that film.
My favorite one is The Devil Man That Lives in the Mountain. That's my favorite one.
There's so many good ones. I love it. Oh my God, I love Fantasia. Everyone is always super like, "You were such a weird child. Like, why didn't you just like fucking, I don't know, Cinderella or whatever shit it is?" And I was like, no, Fantasia was the one for me. I wore that tape out. I love that film. I love it. Just so great. So great.
Quite a lot of my knowledge of classical music is it the hippos or is it the mushrooms? Because that's how I know.
And the big manta ray.
Yeah, they had to recut. You must have heard about this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the centaurs, there's like the very obviously supposed to be depicting a black person centaur. And it's like the servant of the other centaurs. It's been recut now. They've re-released it. It's taken out.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. Maybe I should get a remastered recut version to watch.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I feel like such an urge to go watch it now. But anyway, we're well off track. But yes, that was my favorite.
So Peyton, on the other hand, was very empathetic. She volunteered regularly at a cat sanctuary near her home and was described by people around her as shy, but loving, who was always looking out for others. And this was demonstrated, of course, by the fact that she reached out to Morgan when she was sat alone. Everything was going well for the girls. They'd hang out on the weekend, have sleepovers, and play in the park together whenever they'd get a chance. That was until the sixth grade, so that's like 11, 12 years old, when Anissa Wire, a new girl in town, joined Morgan and Peyton's class. Anissa's dad had moved to the same block of flats Morgan's family lived in, and the pair shared the same bus to and from school. Anissa's childhood was distinctly average. Her parents were divorced, but had a good relationship despite their breakup. She went to choir practice every week and liked to spend time on her iPad watching YouTube videos and FaceTiming with her friends from home. So that's very normal 12-year-old kid stuff. On the school bus journeys, Anissa and Morgan became close. And Anissa would tell Morgan all about the new website she had found, which was called the Creepypasta Wiki. And Anissa specifically liked talking about the character called Slenderman.
Oh, it's scary, isn't it? Because obviously, even what they're doing at this point is just like normal child behavior, like normal child stuff to be fascinated with something like that. It's only creepy retrospectively because we know what's about to happen. But like, it's so scary, like how an idea can take hold. Like just that seed being planted of this is Slender Man and then what goes on to happen. Foreshadowing. It's scary.
And I would have eaten this up at 12 years old. Are you kidding? I would have loved this shit.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my God. I was, like, thirsty for scary content as a 12-year-old. Like, my friends and I used to sit around in the school playground telling each other ghost stories. And obviously, we didn't have enough, like, life experience or exposure to scary things to be able to tell a good scary story. We were just telling things that we were scared about, which is, like, obviously where scary stories start from. No shade on that. But, like, to have an external wiki on creepypastas and scare, oh my God, I would have been fucking obsessed. Absolutely obsessed.
Me too, because I, like, it was so, like, to hear a ghost story I hadn't heard before.
Oh, God.
Was, like, crack to me. Like, it was amazing. I loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. So Morgan was gripped by all of this, just like olden times Hannah and Saru would have been. And she even claimed that she was sure she'd actually seen Slender Man before. I would have said that. I would have said that. I would have said that because I am unbearable. And although Anissa said that she had seen him too, she, at least in our opinion, seemed to grasp the line between fiction and reality a lot better than she would later on.
Morgan introduced Anissa to Peyton, but for Anissa, three was a crowd. She quickly grew jealous of Peyton, not wanting to share her newfound friend. She would make mean comments about Peyton and even exclude her from conversations. Peyton wasn't particularly into the creepypasta stuff, which Morgan and Anissa were getting into. So that combined with Anissa being mean caused Peyton to start to distance herself from the pair. As Morgan and Anissa's friendship intensified, so did their obsession with all things Slender Man. They would discuss, draw pictures, and write stories almost on a daily basis about the supernatural tentacled faceless being. Morgan would even write diary entries addressed to Slender Man, who she was now seeing on a regular basis, in reflections, on street corners, and lurking in the shadows of dark rooms.
At around Christmas time, Morgan told Anissa that they should prove Slender Man's existence. For Morgan, Slender Man presented a very real threat. She believed that if she could show him loyalty, he wouldn't harm her or her family. She had read in an online forum that the only way to do so would be to kill someone that she loved. Anissa, perhaps sensing an opportunity, suggested that person should be Peyton. And so the two 12-year-olds set about making a plan to sacrifice Peyton to Slender Man. They would kill Peyton acting as Slender Man's proxies, and then they would be able to run away to Slender Man's mansion, which they believed was located in the Nicolette Forest, about 300 miles away from their home.
The next one that I have got is still bad. But it is one that you guys have requested a lot. We've seen a lot of you talking about it on social media, so we had to cover it. It is, of course, the case of Colin Pitchfork. I find it very hard to take this man seriously with a surname like that, but we should take him seriously because he is a convicted child rapist and murderer. So for those of you who don't know, let's do a quick rundown on who he is. So Colin Pitchfork, like I said, is a double child rapist and murderer from Leicester here in the UK. And this month, there has been absolute uproar in this country because he's going to be freed from prison. It's a very, very famous case. If you are British, you absolutely know this story. You've definitely at least seen his picture. And so people are rightfully very upset at the idea of him reintegrating back into society in any form. So let's do a quick rundown of what actually happened. So on the 21st of November, 1983, 15-year-old Linda Mann took a shortcut on her way home from babysitting instead of taking her normal route. But she didn't return, and her parents and neighbours spent the night searching for her. The next morning, Linda was found raped and strangled on a deserted footpath, known locally in Leicester as the Black Pad. Using the limited forensic science techniques available at the time, the police managed to link a semen sample taken from Linda's body to a person with type A blood. So if you guys remember, like, remember as if we were all there, back in the early days of forensic science, really all they could do with semen samples was to tell if a person was a secretor, and usually that would tell them their blood type. And that was really the only thing they could do to narrow it down. not deliver a full DNA profile. And they also managed to say that the enzyme profile from this semen matched only 10% of males. So I guess that is a good level of narrowing it down. But there were no other leads or evidence, and the case was left open. Because really, with that, all you can do is get a group of suspects together and then, you know, knock some of them off the list with the DNA evidence that you have. But they didn't have anybody. And it wasn't until 3 years later, on the 31st of July 1986, when a second 15-year-old girl named Dawn Ashworth left her home to visit a friend's house. Her parents expected Dawn to return at about 9:30 p.m., but when she didn't, they called the police to report her missing. 2 days later, Dawn's body was found in a wooded area near a footpath called 10 Pound Lane. She had been beaten, savagely raped and strangled, and the MO matched that of the first attack, and semen samples revealed the same blood type. Why it was called 10 Pound Lane, I don't know.
Leicestershire's weird, man. I don't know. The Midlands in general.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone know, let us know. I'm not sure. I was going to say maybe it's like a sex workplace, but I feel like £10 in the 80s. It's a lot of money. I don't know. Anyway, so a large-scale manhunt took place in Leicestershire to track down the killer of the two schoolgirls, with Leicestershire Constabulary teaming up with the Forensic Science Service to locate the rapist and killer. Almost 6,000 men were asked to provide blood or saliva samples over a six-month period. But no matches with the forensic evidence collected at the two schoolgirls' murder scenes were found. But in 1985, a genetics researcher at the University of Leicester helped develop and pioneer DNA profiling, which became absolutely instrumental in eventually locating Colin Pitchfork. He was, in fact, as is a fun fact, the first criminal to be caught in the UK using DNA fingerprint evidence. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. That's a good one.
There you go. If you're ever in a pub quiz and they're like, who was the first criminal ever caught in the UK using DNA fingerprint evidence? Now you know, it's Colin Pitchfork.
Leave. You should leave that pub, is what you should do.
You should yell Colin Pitchfork as you leave the pub. So Mr. Pitchfork was arrested by Leicestershire Constabulary on the 1st of August 1987 and charged in 1988 at Leicester Crown Court with the two counts of rape and murder. During questioning, Pitchfork admitted to exposing himself to more than 1,000 women. 1,000 women! How did he even find 1,000 women to expose himself to?
I don't think there are that many women in Leicestershire, I really don't.
Fucking hell. No, this is fucking crazy. And yeah, as with most kind of killers like this, that is quite a typical trajectory. That kind of voyeurism, that kind of flashing is quite typical. And he says this compulsion had begun in his early teens. And he says that he later progressed to sexual assault and then to strangling his victims. A pretty typical trajectory. And Pitchfork obviously said that it's because he realized if you're going to be a rapist, you shouldn't leave any witnesses behind because, well, that's how you get caught. But the Crown Court actually rejected this and viewed the motivation of the stranglings as perverted sadism. During his interviews with the police, Pitchfork admitted his crimes but lied about the level and nature of the violence he had inflicted on his victims. He pleaded guilty to the two rapes and murders in addition to another indecent sexual assault, and he was sentenced to life imprisonment. As you can imagine, in the 80s in Britain, this was headline news. And a psychiatric report prepared for the court described Colin Pitchfork as possessing a psychopathic personality disorder accompanied by a serious psychosexual pathology. At the time of his sentencing, the Lord Chief Justice said, "From the point of view of the safety of the public, I doubt if he should ever be released." The Secretary of State set a minimum term of 30 years in 2009. Pitchfork's minimum term sentence was reduced later on appeal to 28 years. This was, according to the Court of Appeal, because he had made exceptional progress while in prison and said that it meant he could be eligible to be considered for release as early as 2015. It's hard to say because obviously, you know, you want to believe in rehabilitation and things like that. But someone who is a psychopathic child sex offender, rapist and murderer, it's a tough one. It's a toughie to know how to feel about that.
I understand the, emotional response to it. But, I think you believe in rehabilitation or you don't. Do you know what I mean? I think it's, I understand the, eye for an eye feeling. But if the prison system isn't there to rehabilitate people, then what's the point?
Yeah, it's just how successfully that's being done, I guess. Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see. And I totally understand the emotional response behind that. You know, what is the reoffence rate in this country? Pretty higher than other countries. So yeah, I can understand that feeling, especially with somebody who has clearly been quite a dangerous man during his time. But despite this decision that he could appeal for parole in 2015, he was denied freedom up until now. But yeah, like we said, he does look like he's going to be released. And yeah, obviously the family's victims, because they are still alive, you know, this was only in the 80s, strongly do not want this to happen, which you can obviously completely understand. But it does look like he's going to be released. So yeah, hopefully we won't have any updates for you on him doing anything horrible and he just goes and lives a quiet life.
No, I hope not. I hope that the people who work in the prison who've assessed him are good at their jobs.
Yes, let's all hope on that. So yeah, that is the very notorious British case of Colin Pitchfork and his imminent release.
People ask us about that one all the time. I think because of the DNA aspect. Yeah.
Just the name is enough to make you sick. But Preeti Patel, obviously, our of Asian descent Home Secretary. She has obviously been used as the poster child to go out and be like, we're not racist because I'm, you know, of Indian descent or whatever, and I can say anything because I have at some point in my life been called racist names. And so she goes out, thinks she's got a free card to say whatever the fuck she wants. And I'm here to be like, no, she doesn't, and stop allowing her to do this, please. So even people I respect were on things like Channel 4 News, which is a news station that I respect. Probably Channel 4 and Al Jazeera are the only news channels I watch anymore. And they had all these people on and they were just like, so are you saying that Preeti Patel is a racist? Is that what you're saying? And they were like, no, obviously to say that would be ridiculous. That's not what I'm saying. And I was like, why have you only got white people on this channel being interviewed who think that they have to say that? Because I understand these people think that they have to say that because Preeti Patel is gaslighting everybody by being like, oh, I was racially abused and therefore I can't possibly be a racist. Don't fall for that fucking line. It is a load of bullshit. The idea that someone just because they are of color cannot be a racist or implement racist policies is the biggest lie you are being told, and the Tories use that as like a way to get out of jail free, and it is ridiculous, and I'm here to tell you, don't fucking have it. And if anybody says it to you, you can tell them, well, actually, maybe this is going to conflict you a little bit, because I listen to this podcast and there's a woman on there called Saruti and she happens to be brown and she says brown people can be racist, and you can tell them that, and if they've got an issue they can come take it up with me, because fuck off with that narrative. I hate it so much. Preeti Patel is a racist. She implements racist policies. Just because at some point in her life she's been called racist names does not mean she cannot be a racist. I have to say that because I've just been yelling it at the TV whenever the news is on all week. And then I remember when somebody in my house politely reminds me, you do have a platform where you can say that. You don't have to just yell into the abyss in our house. So here is me doing that. So yeah, just like disavow yourself of that thinking, please. Just because we've said it before on the show and I'll say it again, somebody who is oppressed in one way can be an oppressor to others. That they are not things that do not fit together. And also, I find it very racist that people would say that Preeti Patel can't be a racist. Here's another argument you can throw at these people. Why are you treating people of color like we're one monolithic group? Like we all just get together and have parties and we're all fine and there's no ethnic conflict or racism between different groups just because we happen to have more melanin in our skin. Fuck off. That is such a bullshit way of thinking. Like, we are not one monolithic group. We all hate each other, and we even hate each other within our groups. Like, there is no meaningful sense to say that Preeti Patel can't be a racist because she's brown. Stop it right now. Stop it, everybody. And that's it. Now let's talk about Katie Hopkins, because I also hate her. And let's talk about it.
Yes. So Katie motherfucking Hopkins, we thought we'd got rid of her. She'd left. Oh, was that a little sneaky merch reveal there?
It's the only piece of merch I have right now, so yeah.
Yeah, so she was going to appear on Celebrity Big Brother Australia. That's how much her career is suffering. She can't even get on Celebrity Big Brother here.
Why does Celebrity Big Brother Australia, a nation with its own famous people, need Katie Hopkins?
Nobody knows. So, but the health minister, it was a really good quote from the health minister in the news this morning. It was like, I'd never heard of her before and I hope never to hear of her again.
Yeah, damn right. You don't want to. You don't want her in your country. She's a fucking, what was it she called immigrants? Cockroaches. Don't let her in. She's a fucking cockroach. She's the vile, vile woman.
So she's been deported because she was quarantining for Celebrity Big Brother. And she did a Instagram live from her quarantine hotel room, which I am sure she had not paid for.
No.
And she said on the Instagram live that she has been purposefully flouting the quarantine rules by opening the door naked to the hotel staff with no mask on. And that's what, according to what I read this morning, that's what she got deported over, of the sort of like, not just the breaking of the rules, whether she did or not, who knows, because it's fucking Katie Hopkins and she lies. But they were like, you absolutely not, get the fuck out. Like, how arrogant do you, because that's not really putting you, you're risking the lives of the people who work in this hotel that you are staying in for free for 10 days so you can be on TV. Like, how small is your world and how small is your life? That you are just like, well, I'm so inconvenienced. I'm so inconvenienced for 10 days. Why did you agree to go then?
I don't know. I don't know. This is all just like part of the outrage culture, part of the like, you know, anti-woke mob. And so she can just like take pictures of herself and say that she's flouting these lockdown quarantine rules, even though she's doing it because she has to for the job. I just feel like it's just a way to like rally up and get her following roused up in some way. I mean she's just such a despicable, immature, juvenile, horrendous person, and it makes me sad that as a society she has you know, so many followers and she has so many people who think she's somebody worth listening to. And that, why is Australia, and it's not Australia as a state, why is whoever is broadcasting Big Brother in Australia looking for Katie Hopkins to be their host?
This is why she does what she does, because people love to hate her and she knows. I've read like several interviews with her when she's like, oh, like, once I've made my money you'll never hear from me.
Oh, of course. Like she's like that guy, Milo Yiannopoulos, all of them. It's just to develop a following based on sincerely held beliefs that are well thought through and reasoned and researched and studied is a difficult thing to do. That takes up a lot of time and effort, and you need to know your facts and you need to, like, you know, articulate yourself well. What's an easier way to make a shitload of money? Just to be ignorant and angry and loud about it. And that's exactly what these people do. Whether they really believe the things that they do or not, I don't know. Whether they are truly such horrendous people or not, I don't know. But what I do know is it's a lot easier to make your money being an ignorant, loud person than it is to try and be a reasonable, rational person. Yeah. And it's just a cash cow, isn't it? Outrage is just a cash cow. And it just makes me sick that it works. I really wish it didn't, but it does. And for as long as it does, these people will do it. But Katie Hopkins is a particularly vile little creature. And I hope she just goes away. But I know she won't. I know she won't. And that's sad. Oh, God. But also, like, can broadcasters just, like, please stop? Stop giving her airtime. But I know they won't either, because people will tune in to watch her. Whether they hate watch her or love watch her. Oh my God.
It's all box office, it's all money. The money spends the same.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. Oh my God. I'm depressed. This is okay.
Would you like to hear some funny tweets that I've collected?
Oh, please. Yes, please. Because then I've just got more depressing news.
Okay. I've got three funny tweets. Shall I break them up? I'll give you the first one.
Because I was going to talk about Bill Cosby. So why don't we start with a funny tweet, and then I'll start talking about Bill Cosby, and then we'll take a break when it gets really awful, and then you can tell us another, and then you can end it.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. I've got a bit to say about Cuba as well, but it's very short.
Oh, well, yes, we need to talk about Cuba too.
It's basically just Biden, pull your finger out, full stop. this is from like a sort of like red carpet Hollywood E type.
Love it.
And they tweeted, Kendall Jenner ate a grilled cheese, fries, crepes, and more before hitting the Met Gala red carpet. Now that is bravery. And someone replied, I live in Syria. And this story gave me strength to carry on. Thank you for sharing.
Oh my God. Oh my God. What is this world? I want to get off. I just hate it so much. This reminds me of, I saw a tweet this weekend actually that was like a picture from like a theme park. And this is what it reminds me of. And it's like of Goofy. Point, like a picture of Goofy pointing, and it's like a sign that says this ride will not stop unless there is an emergency, and then underneath there's another sign that's been added that says crying is not an emergency. And then somebody tweeted that picture saying this about sums up my adult life. And that's how I feel right now. Granted, that joke works better in visual format, but hey, we are podcasters. Though, you know, we are also sort of on your TV at the moment if you're a $10 or up patron. But anyway, okay, well, that, I just, can we just burn it all down? Can we just burn it all down and start again? I'm so, so sad.
What you just heard was a mix of all sorts of content that we put up exclusively on Patreon. So, Under the Duvet was included in there, which is our hour-long exclusive Patreon-only podcast that we release every single Wednesday, where Hannah and I talk about everything from what's going on in global politics to the last horrible date that we went on to the latest TV show that we're watching. It's anything and everything goes. So if you're a $10 and up patron, you can actually watch that in video form every single week. Everyone else, $5 and up, can listen to the audio form of that as a podcast on the podcast player of your choice. We also release every single month our In the News segment, where we delve behind the headlines of some of the weirdest, latest true crime stories that are not quite ready for the red-handed treatment over on the main show. We also release over on Patreon for all $10 and up patrons an entire full-length bonus episode every single month. So if you want to listen to that, head on over to Patreon now and sign up. And the really exciting thing that you should know is maybe you're like, hey, you guys have been doing Patreon for like 3 years. If I sign up now, maybe I'm too late. Maybe I missed the boat. I've missed a lot of the best content. Well, let me stop you right there. Because if you become a patron, you will actually get access to the entire back catalog. So that's right. If you sign up today to become a red-handed patron, you will get 3 years worth of bonus content. And you also, every single week, get access to that week's red-handed episode a day early and ad-free. Honestly, it's worth every penny. So go check it out. And if it takes your fancy, sign up. Thank you very much.